Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fourth episode of That Millennial Life. How are we all doing? I hope everyone is enjoying this crisp autumn. Not sure if it's weird yet to still be wearing shorts. Weather. season change can make me a bit uncomfortable because it reminds me that time is still passing me by, no matter how hard I try to convince myself that it isn't, and that things that seemingly happened, not too long ago actually happened quite long ago. For example, I graduated college in May or June, whenever that was, and it doesn't seem like it was too long ago, but I guess it's been a minute. I guess it's been about 5 months, almost a half a year. Holy crap. Oh, God. And, it's generally unsettling to me that it is no longer the summer after I graduated college, but it is now the fall after I graduated college. And I feel as if that should give me some type of new motivation, but I'm still looking for that. But anyway, I was very thankful to have my good friend Charlie Doe on the podcast today, because he is a smart one. Charlie and I met at college at Quinnipiac University, where he also attended, and we were in the same fraternity, and we hosted a late-night talk show together for our school's television station. So we talk about that, we talk about some other things. I was very, very thankful to have him on, and I think that anyone who's listening is going to be able to quickly detect the love and admiration I have for this wonderful man. He's helped me a lot, not only in life, but in this interview as well, when talking about how he thinks this show can be most effective, and in translating to me, and thus to the audience as well, in a way that was much more eloquent than I could have done. What his take is on the purpose and the possible eventual importance of the show. And I don't want to try to summarize everything that was said too much, because I think that the ideas would be best received by listening to the interview. But Charlie talks about his own individual path in college, and that the reason he believes that he found success was not because of his own individual ability, which he puts quite modestly, but because of the perception that a group of people had of him in believing and trusting that he would be able to do a good job, and that anyone's individual capability for success is best fulfilled if they have a support system behind him or her that believes in them. And I think that concept carried over perfectly to the purpose of the show. And the reason that I wanted to make it, in that I know that I can't do this all on my own. And I'm sure that there's some young people out there who can't either and think that they have to. I believe that our generation has the ability to accomplish something great, but that we have to do it together as much as we can. Here he is, Charlie Doe.
Do you do any sort of intro? We just start talking, or is there a theme song?
There was just a motorcycle that ran past.
It was.
That was. I hope that doesn't come up.
We do live next to a main road. There's not much we can do.
Well, let's just hope that the majority of the people who drive Pi are in Priuses.
Prii Kia Optimas.
Because they run on recyclable goods. Don't they run on, like, I don't know.
I don't think so. The Nissan Leaf does.
What's that joke? Someone has a joke about something that Prius make that noise when they drive. Prius. Sorry.
It's okay. I'm going to move this over.
Yeah, move it over.
Because this way, when I look at you,
yeah,
we're here.
It keeps asking me to join your Wi-Fi. Oh, we started a while ago.
Can we restart?
No.
Well, it's silly to have this back and forth banter.
No. I just want to get right into it.
Okay, let's get right into it then.
Yeah. First of all, I miss you.
I miss you too. It's good to see you again.
To be honest, one of the reasons why I wanted to do these things is because it gives me an excuse to like go see people I haven't seen in a while and sit down and talk to them for an hour.
Yeah, I mean, usually friendship will accomplish that for you, but I'm glad that you undertook a creative project.
Yeah, well, now I have friendship and that.
Yeah, I mean, I asked you to hang out afterwards, and you said, nah, just the podcast is fine.
I did not say
that. I have
that.
A schedule.
You have to hang out with your girlfriend after.
I do.
Because you're an adult person now.
You don't want to die alone. You do those things along with the podcast.
Do you not want to die alone?
That's the goal. It's one of them. One of the goals.
But anyway, I miss you. And I was driving here and thinking about you deeply and intensely, I want to say, first of all, how crazy is it that this is only my fourth interview or my fourth? I don't even like calling them an interview. I like calling them just
moments.
Conversation.
Yeah, conversation.
This is my fourth whatever. And you're the second ginger to be on.
Yeah, you definitely are overstepping your quorum, your needs, your
there's a weird ratio.
Yeah, exactly. You're half filling the your quota.
Half the people I've interviewed have been ginger.
You're a dying breed. You got to keep us in the archives.
Yeah, that doesn't represent the population.
No. Or really the interesting people population.
I think a lot of gingers are interesting.
Well, you got to compensate in some way.
So how have you... How the fuck have you dealt with living in Hamden while not in the town that you went to college to without being a part of college, that college anymore? I would just drive past Quinnipiac every day and just cry.
Yeah, I mean, it's convenient that we're a little bit further from the school, so I don't have to have those crying moments. There's never a time when I'm driving past where we had most of our good memories.
Right.
But it's different. It's a weird way to be in that in-between of adult and essentially overgrown child that most college students are. So it's weird. It's weird to eat at the same places that we ate.
When we were kings.
Now I just kind of feel like I'm just sitting there watching the world happen. It's definitely different. I mean, you are in the same environment with a totally different mindset. You're acting differently. You're wearing khakis. That's a new thing, especially for me. I was always a cargo guy yeah. until I became a dark jeans guy. And now I'm a khaki man. So I've really moved up.
That's the transition. You go from cargos to dark jeans to khakis.
Yeah, At least I did. I mean, I did years after most others did. But
yeah.
That's what happens when you live in Maine, is you catch up late. But otherwise, I would say it's the same transition as anyone else. I almost probably have an easier transition because when the real world hits, I can go back to like that familiar comfort zone. I mean,
right.
A lot of people go back home and work and save money living at home, but I think that's rougher. You're going back to rules. I still have my comfort zone isn't mom's home cooking anymore, even though she's a saint. It's knowing
Paula Doe is a saint.
It's knowing that, you know, it's $5 wing night, or it's, you know, trivia night at a place where you can go back and pretend that you're still living without any worries or responsibilities.
I guess it is all the facade of independence.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, I'm still dependent. I need help. I'm doing it on
Someone
my own.
Help me.
I'm doing it on my own, but it's not as if I'm driving by all of my friends anymore. My friends are gone too. So yes, I'm location-wise, I'm in proximity to where I went to college, but college for me is gone. It's the same as if I was living at home or living anywhere else.
Yeah. How have you dealt with Other than that, how have you dealt with not being in college anymore?
Well, you know, a lot of people struggle with the, you know, feeling like your soul dies once you leave college. But that happened to me. I never had one. It's the ginger thing again. So I had the luxury of not feeling cold and empty inside, because that was life. That's you guys are all just catching up.
Oh, God.
No, I think you deal with well. I was, again, overly fortunate. I had a job in May. So before we graduated, even before that, I think in April, I knew where I was going afterwards. So I didn't have the struggle of almost feeling like, what was the point?
You're trying to reach somewhere with nowhere to go.
I feel like a lot of people have that main struggle of you go back home after school and you don't really know which way is up, and you're applying to jobs, but you're in your childhood bedroom, or you're trying to, you're trying to get a job, and but you're working at home, so you are an adult from 9 to 5, and then you're coordinating dinner with your parents. That's a lot of a struggle. I've adjusted well because I've had to. I've been living, you know, I live with roommates still, but I had a job. I knew where I was going to go. I knew when I started that it was going to be a change, but I had that time to adjust to that change. And I haven't really lived at home since our sophomore year because my parents moved down south. So it hasn't been like I've had that normal back and forth between college and a home life.
I
would go home for major vacations, but otherwise I sort of just stayed around here. So it's been a slow transition. I think a lot of people think, you know, if you start a job 2 weeks after graduation, it's an instant slap into reality, but it's almost more gradual than if you slap to reality of living back home and then another reality of working and living home and then move to independence. It's almost easier just to rip the Band-Aid off.
Yeah. I mean, how has your perspective changed from when you, I'm interested not just about what you talked about, but how has your perspective changed from when you graduated to now in terms of how you thought you would be able to deal with it?
Oh, okay. Wow, you're really, really going for it. I really thought jobs would be harder, not necessarily the work, but the workplace mentality. I thought that when you're at a job, you're, you know, your shirt's ironed and tucked in and you're there early because if you're there late, everyone's going to notice. And you're, you know, when you're young, you're taking your lumps and you kind of have to, you know, you, the folder's on the desk by 9 a.m. and you're ready and you're always working and there isn't that social time because that's over. And I don't know if it's just my company, because my company is a very, you know, creative, it's a digital marketing company. So it's a creative kind of young environment with a lot of really innovative people kind of in their own fields that work together. But it's really just like being almost like back at the cafeteria, just it's with different people, you know, everyone.
The college cafeteria.
Yeah. It's people coming in and out and people are doing different things and you a little mix, like a little emulsion of people's personal lives and people's social lives, but also people's work talent. I mean, you learn about people in a different way because now you're not learning about what they're like on the weekends or what they're like with their friends. You're really strictly seeing these people's talents and how they work in teams and things like that. So it isn't this like cut off from society cube where you're on your own with a to-do list, crossing it off and putting it in front of a superior's, you know, desk. That's not the environment. It's a very like team oriented, how can all of these people come together and accomplish something environment where you're still being social. You know, you have to maximize your abilities and you have to step up and say when you can do something or when you can't do something.
Right.
So I was expecting a very isolated experience and I got the opposite. So that shifts your perspective in terms of what is the real world. You know, it's not a cold, lonely place where you're on your own until
people are still communal.
Die.
There's still a joint.
Because I mean, nobody wants to work in that environment. So I guess beforehand, I assume that you hated it and then you slowly accepted it and just became a shell of yourself. It seems what parents are, right? But it turns out it's not that way. Something else slowly kills you from the inside.
Yeah.
And I really look forward to seeing what it is.
What that is.
But I guess it changed my perspective in another way,
maybe
too.
Maybe it's the other parent.
Right. That could be it. You really realize that time is way longer. I don't know how to explain this, but in college, when you wanted something, you got it in a maximum of like 4 months. Like
if
you wanted a different class, you just took it in 4 months. If you wanted to lead something, max it took you was 4 months to be the oldest kid in a room. Like it was an instant gratification, but not like, ooh, I want, you know, a candy bar, I'll go get it. But in terms of success and growing up, I mean, 4 years seems like a long time when you think of who you were coming out of high school to who you are now.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at, you know, what's my current job and where do I want to be or what's my next job, 4 years is how long your learning process is. Like 4 years is how long you're going to be spending at that job, picking everything up, learning how to be in your next position. And that seems like it's forever away because the last 4 years you had all this sort of growth. You went from a different social person, a different professional person, a different internal and external, the way you see things, the way you think about it. So it seems like it's almost like an eternity, how long you're going to be waiting in one specific spot. And we're so built on looking at what the next step is, that it's very weird to say that maybe the next step is staying put for a while, because the next step is so much further away. I mean, people that we know are getting engaged now.
That's ridiculous.
Forever we've just been like, yeah, and that's when you're an adult.
That's going to happen.
That's later. Yeah, yeah, you're an adult when that happens. So it just moves. It moves much more gradually. And I guess that's probably the biggest perspective switch, is that now you don't think of things in terms of weeks or semesters or until the next vacation. You think of things in terms of a couple of years when the next major life change happens.
Yeah. It's crazy, because I thought about that a lot, is how in your adolescence there's a lot of points that you can look towards, and that's kind of based on the community that you're in. And then when you graduate college, it's kind of like there's nowhere to look, or there's nothing to reach for anymore.
Right.
And it's the first time where I kind of don't feel a part of something.
Right. Yeah. Because there's no communal real experience anymore. Everyone has jobs, and that's cool, but
and
they're all different.
And that's what it is. Yes.
And it's what it is. And I mean, you can tell me about your job and I'm psyched for you, but at the end of the day, there's only so much you can say that will entertain me because I'm not doing it. And we can both just sort of share that. And, yep. Other people tell me what to do too. Awesome. Cool. What else?
That's it.
Yeah. And that's about it. So it's definitely, yeah, it's almost like the way, you know, birthdays. Back in the day, 13 was huge because your birthday ended in a teen. And then 16 was a big deal for some.
Because you could start to drive.
And 18 was cool.
Because you're an adult.
Kind of arbitrarily.
Yeah.
And then 21's cool because you could tell your parents you drank. And then every year after, you're just less psyched for the next decade.
Oh,
I mean, at least you're kind of irrelevant until 30. And then you really get hit with, glory days are indeed gone.
Now there's no excuse.
Yeah, now it's just looking back. It's remembering what I used to be. It's convincing everyone and yourself that once upon a time you mattered.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. I am so not looking forward to that.
It's all right.
All right. Well, I guess I should say thank you for doing this. I'm here sitting with my friend Charlie Doe, who I met when I went to college at Quinnipiac University. I didn't like you at first.
I didn't like you.
We've talked about this before.
Yeah, you were a poser.
I wasn't a poser.
A diamond stud earring.
There was sterling silver.
That's even worse. You couldn't even pose to be a poser.
Dude, in Jersey, that was the norm. If you didn't wear
know.
Earrings...
I'd never met anyone from Jersey. Yeah. I was repulsed at what I had seen.
And the first time I met you, I thought you were just a weird loser.
Well,
and then I found out how much I loved you. I found out you were my muse.
All right. I had a nice awakening to the cultural happenings of the other 49 states.
Yeah. I mean, in Jersey, if you don't wear earrings, you're a poser.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least for people our age at the time that I was in high school. Me and Stav talked about that a little bit, I want to go back a little because, you know, I think you know how much I respect you.
Yeah.
How much I love you.
Hope so.
And how intelligent I think you are. And
you're making me blush.
And how self-aware and the social intelligence you have, which is all covered in this humility.
If I could get a girl to humor. Say these things, I'd...
Well, I mean, you're not that. You're only okay looking.
The truth comes out. The self-aware goes away.
I thought I was beautiful. No, you are beautiful.
Okay.
You
on the inside,
that.
Yeah.
No, on the outside too, you're beautiful.
But anyway, I'll stop interrupting.
But No. And another thing I wanted to say, feel free to interject whenever I'm saying anything, because I'm sure whatever your perspective is or whatever you're thinking about is much more interesting and eloquent than the way in which I'm putting it. So if you ever have a thought, feel free to be like, no, Joe, shut up.
I will. This
is the way it is. But after I buttered your bread a little bit.
Right.
To use some of Pete Holmes' lingo. Do you know who that is?
He's the College Humor guy, right?
Yeah, he was on College Humor. Yeah. Okay, I thought something just bad happened, but it's still recording. He was on College Humor and he was a stand-up comedian. He uses butter your bread as a form of, I guess that's a ubiquitous saying. People say that.
Sure.
But... The reason why I was throwing all those compliments at you is because I want to know where all that came from.
Same.
I want to know how that all happened. Where are you from?
I'm from all over. All over, I guess.
Where were you born?
I was born in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And I lived there for a little bit, and then I lived in North Carolina for a spell, and then back and forth between the South and the North, between like Massachusetts, New Hampshire for a little bit.
Right.
But I guess my formative years were probably in Maine. Moved there in sixth grade, so all of middle school, all of high school in Maine. The really memorable friends are in Maine. So I would say Maine. I'm from Maine.
You're from Maine.
And my parents live in North Carolina now. Yeah.
Your parents live in North Carolina.
They live in Carolina now.
So what did your parents do that made you have to move around so much?
Nothing. I mean, my dad worked at a supermarket.
Oh,
and,
wow.
In the management side. Mm-hmm. He's worked at the company for like 20, 30 some odd years, starting as a bagger, moving up to a pretty high management position. So he's a little bit of a bags
started
to riches,
from the bottom.
As you like to say, a little bags to riches. Yeah, that's fun.
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
And Mama Doe has bounced around from, I don't really know what she did when I was young, but then she moved into the schools doing like technology support. So they kind of just moved with
just
the tides. Well, because when he would get, my dad moved up in the company a good amount. So I guess do that, you kind of have to be fluid. So we lived down south when his job was down there.
So you're born in Massachusetts, then you went to the south, then you went to Maine?
Then we went back to Mass, to New Hampshire, and then slowly up to Maine because the company headquarters was in Maine. So we moved to Massachusetts, and then he commuted. And then we moved a little bit closer to New Hampshire. But he still commuted.
So from being born to when you went to college, how many different homes did you live in?
I've lost count, but more than 10, probably like 13-ish.
Oh my God, dude.
Like that I vividly remember, I guess, living in.
Yeah.
Probably like from the time that I could tell someone I was moving, probably like 8 to 10. We moved a lot. So maybe that's where it comes from, is just constantly being the new kid, in addition to being the new kid with red hair, to being the new kid who had braces from second grade to sophomore year of high school and red hair.
You had to figure something out.
Yeah, you got to get that social aspect. I mean, when you're meeting people forever, you have to get used to meeting people forever. So I guess maybe that's where the sort of like, how do I interact with everyone sort of
the
thing
amiability.
Came up. And then also Maine's just a nice place. They're just nice white people and everyone's in cargo shorts.
Yeah.
And you're just there. If you're in Maine, you're either old or you're there. So everyone just sort of, you know, interacts how you interact.
Right.
But as far as, I mean, I forget what else you said to me. I mean,
it's okay. I'm interested in, because I lived in two houses my whole life, and they were a mile away from each other.
Yeah, we moved a lot, but I guess I always assumed everyone moved all the time.
Right, so it was normal to you as it was happening. You didn't know any other way.
I think people who only move once or twice have a rough time with it, but if you move all the time, you just move all the time. You don't have any friends to leave because you're 8.
Oh my God.
So you forget that there were people.
Existed.
Yeah. So that wasn't too different. What other nice things did you say about me? I'll try to answer where
self-aware.
They came from.
Humor. Where did the humor come from?
If everyone else is making fun of you, you gotta jump in. You gotta get to it first, you know? No, I guess, I mean, my dad's side of the family is, you know, just the Irish, the very loud side of the family, so you're always just mocking one another. So what else would you do other than to do that?
Right.
So that's just kind of where I came from, is just a loud place where you can make fun of each other, and that's how you hang out. That's how you interact.
Right.
Is making jokes about one another to show affection. Mm-hmm. Far as being self-aware, I don't know. Most people are self-aware. I think you just have to take the time to recognize that you're self-aware.
Right.
You know, if you're comfortable with yourself, you're self-aware. If you know what your weaknesses are, which most people do, you just have to be able to admit them. I feel like most people
and find compromises.
Being self-aware is a cool thing, but I don't think it's a hard thing to do. It's just something that not a lot of people put time into.
So when you were a kid and you weren't moving around so much, what were the ways in which you usually, what did you do to occupy your time? What are some of your memories from that time? Like,
let's see. Well, it would shock. I mean, it's unfortunate that we're only via audio, because if people could look at me, they would be shocked to find out that I wasn't a stellar athlete, I would believe.
People would be shocked to believe that.
Well, with this physique, you would assume, only assume, you know.
You are the next.
An honorable mention. I was more of the participation medal type.
Yeah. You got by through your drive and your pizzazz.
What did I do? Well, I met my group of friends from home in middle school. Mm-hmm. One of them lived down the street, and I met him on the bus. Mm-hmm. And that, back then, really just validated a friendship. Like, oh, well, we're on the same bus.
Yeah.
Might as well spend time, right?
We're going to be here.
And then the next group, back in school, you only could have 8 people to a lunch table. And that was a very big deal.
Right.
Because by basic division, most friend groups didn't come in eights or even fours. So you'd almost get voted out of the table. And I vividly remember the day, because I was a super nerd, which is still the same thing. I just became slightly more fun to be around. I was at the nerd table, discussing various things.
Like what?
And I don't really quite remember. Probably along the lines of, the movies, if we were going to sneak into what was coming out back then. I think like Anchorman was coming out around that time. You would know. When did Anchorman come out?
I think that came out early. I don't know. It was before 40 Year Old Virgin, because that's how Steve Carell got 40 Year Old Virgin. I think 40 Year Old Virgin was 2008. So maybe around 2005, 2006.
Yeah, that would make sense. That's like sixth grade. That's when I kind of peaked, I guess. And I remember getting the call up from the minor leagues from that table to the cool table.
Yeah.
Because they had kicked out the twins, the Randall twins. I still remember them.
Yeah.
They had been removed from the cool table, and I was called up to the cool table.
Yeah.
So in, you know, how you get ahead in life, I became a sellout and stopped talking to
the losers.
No, they weren't losers. Those were good kids. I still feel bad about it.
And I say losers, meaning
because I'm them.
That's how people identify them.
In sixth grade, the mean way of describing sixth grade friends, I left that table. I moved to the cool table of people that I generally no longer like whatsoever. Those were shitty human beings.
Wow.
And I moved to the cool table. And inconveniently, I hated everyone at the cool table.
I completely forgot about the cool table.
Yeah, how did you forget about the cool table? It's a formulative.
It was table 8.
It's like Freud's.
I was table 9, like Freud's, so like other. I was at the table next to the cool table, meaning like they were okay with us being by them.
Yeah, it's the exact same way you've been forever.
Sometimes you can walk over
you're near the cool kids.
Yes.
Just trying to make it.
Yes.
Well, yeah, it's like Freud's level of development. It's like after every stage, you got to get to the cool table. That's like the sixth stage.
What is that? What do you mean Freud's level of development? What is that?
Psychoanalysis. Everyone's got different stages you got to fulfill. It's why you have different like tics and stuff.
Oh.
We'll get to that.
I would love to get into
that.
Yeah,
we'll get. No, it's controversial.
Freud.
and I only took Psych 101, so I don't have much more than that.
Dude,
I want the audience to think that I know what I'm talking about.
Well, you saying that you only know a little bit about it is enough to make them think that you know what you're talking about. But anyway, continue what you were saying. Go on to the point.
So I moved up to the cool table of kids who weren't really cool but had that social stock. And then one of my best friends was on like a different like wing team. You know, you had like those, they separated you out.
Yeah, there's
and
subgroups.
He was in like some sixth grade AP math or something, and he moved into the cool table, and now we had 9. So we had to boot one, and I made the cut, but then a couple days I'd miss the cut. But he was actually a good dude, so when the days I missed the cut, he and I would be our own table.
Wow.
And that developed
so
a friendship.
So ridiculous.
Yep.
Childhood is ridiculous.
Yep. And so he and I stayed friends, and then
we treat each other like barbarians.
Through him, I met my other group of core friends.
Yeah.
And then we all played football together. They played. I watched with a jersey on.
In the stands.
In the team. Oh, on the bench.
On the bench.
They were good. Well, I was the tea boy. I'd have to go get the tea after someone kicked it when I broke my wrist.
Yeah,
running. Yeah. Broke my wrist running. Yep. At football practice,
what,
but just
fall
running.
Over?
Yeah, we were running backwards and I fell and snapped it.
Did you, were you part of the team, but you
yeah,
just...
Yeah, no, I was on the team. I was fully a member of the team.
But you were just, it was just known that you weren't good, so your responsibilities yeah, were just...
I could have been good with coaching. I'm convinced that I could have been good with coaching, but I was not,
you were not
a coach's dream.
Coaching.
I was not given coaching. But the day I got back from my broken wrist, I had 2 sacks and then didn't play again.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
When was
the
this?
Other,
what age?
This was like 7th, 8th grade.
Okay.
And I ended up quitting my sophomore year because I wasn't any good.
Yeah.
And that's what you do when you're bad, you quit at everything. But yeah, so that's, I mean, that's where I met my friends, but it's all just happenstance.
Yeah.
Yeah. The college me was very different than the younger me.
How so?
I mean, you can toot my horn because I don't want to toot it myself.
Yeah.
Metaphorically,
well,
of course.
Well, say why you were bad in high school.
No, I wasn't bad. I was the man. no, but I mean, college me, without being conceited, got a lot of credit for being someone who, you know, managed a room.
Knew the right things to say.
Knew the right things to say and when to say them. Knew how to deal with...
that was the washer?
That was the dryer.
The dryer.
Knew how to deal with various... issues, you know, I was a public speaker, somebody who you'd go to with questions.
Yes.
And that just sort of happened one day because one person decided that
you had that ability.
Not even that. They just said, like, yeah, why not? Like, we'll just let that happen.
Well,
and
it was
I sort
more
of
than that,
no,
continue.
It really wasn't.
What do you mean?
Well, in high school I ran for student council.
Oh, I thought you mean it happened in college.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm saying in high school I ran for student council. I came in like 10th. Out of like the 12 kids who ran, and I was like pretty well known. I was pretty bummed about it.
Right.
And then our freshman year, I ran for student government with
against
what I
me.
Thought was a hysterical rap video.
That's what made me think you were a loser.
Yeah, well, you walking around in a suit pretending like you mattered, holding your friend's hand because he did matter, made me think
all
you
right.
were annoying.
We both didn't matter at the time. He's talking about stuff.
I mean, I came in like 15th out of 10. Yeah, I came in like 15th out of 10.
What, in freshman year?
Freshman year.
You
I think
came
I got,
in fourth.
I got like, no, I didn't. No.
No, no, no. No. For vice president, you
no,
came in
I
fourth.
I did not.
Dude, that was your Twitter bio was... Came fourth. No, you know.
No, it wasn't. I led my division 2 intramural basketball
yes,
team to
fourth.
Came fourth
in vice president voting.
I don't think I was fourth.
No, it was, yeah, dude. There
I was
wasn't
low.
Even,
I'm
there
you.
Wasn't even 15 people ran for vice president.
I'm
that doesn't matter.
You.
This is all.
I'm telling you. I
all
was,
that matters is I came in first.
Yeah, I was low in that vote. And I was like, all right, well, I'll just be a fun guy to hang with, I hope,
yeah.
In this mess of people from New Jersey.
And
then
New Jersey,
yeah,
and Connecticut,
and then we
and
got
New York
we got involved in other various things, and I mean slowly people who
started
we both know no not even started to realize they were just sort of like, oh well, why don't you just do this?
Yeah.
And I wasn't good at it, and then more people were like, well, what do you
what
think
what are you talking about?
Well, I mean think about the things I was involved in. I never had any sort of better qualities until everyone decided I did, and then they all just sort of took what I said.
That
as,
is not true.
What's an outstanding moment where I did anything special then?
When you spoke to someone.
Okay, I sound nice.
That's no, you don't sound nice. There's a difference between someone like me who just maybe tries to speak eloquently for the sake of flash and whatever. I mean, sometimes I think there's substance, maybe, but there's flash with you, and it's a whole combined package of you're saying things in the completely right way, off the cuff, meaning that it's coming from a place that's sincere, and it has substance to it, and there's meaning behind it, and that's why people realize that, or that's why that happened, because people realized it right away.
I don't know. I'm a firm... I mean, thank you, but I'm a firm believer that... your audience determines what they hear much more than what you say does. If your audience thinks you're a good speaker, or if they look up to you, or if they respect you, or if they're intimidated by you, totally dictates what you're saying. I
right.
think that, I mean, it's one of like the things about, you know, if you're writing a speech is, if you're writing a speech and you're somebody who's in a position to give one, mm-hmm. you want your speech to be written that anyone can read it. Because they're just going to follow you.
Yes.
So I think
you
once
probably,
you hit...
You had to deal with that when you did the orientation thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like once you hit a level of almost like not notoriety, but I guess a level of command, what you say is irrelevant. It's just sort of that you're there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've always thought that's why... I mean, being a leader is much, much easier than being a follower. The hardest thing for anyone to do is follow someone their own age. It's why young bosses are rare. It's why, like...
That dryer's going to kill me.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I wish whoever was drying their clothes would do it. But alas, some people have not transitioned into adulthood in this home.
It's okay. We'll just have that be a part of this.
Yeah. It's why people, when they're older, have struggles with like younger parents, is that it's almost counterintuitive to follow someone that if you think you know more, if you think you're in the same social status. Being a leader is just sort of given to you. Someone's like, oh, no, you got to listen. And everyone just sort of listens. You don't really have to earn it. You have to do well with it once you're given it. But I think if you look at people who are considered like good leaders and people who are considered poor leaders, the difference isn't necessarily decisions made or ability or, I mean, sometimes you'll have people who make mistakes, but somebody that everyone respects that makes a mistake, they'll just think it's minor. Whereas if it's somebody that people, that are put into a position before anyone's ready to give that credibility, then it becomes like a catastrophe. Does that make sense?
Kind of.
I mean, think about, I mean, you've talked to Stav a million times and these people know Stav. So think about Stav, our senior year,
right,
as the, you know, president of the school, a very well-spoken, very intelligent person. And then Stav, our sophomore year. Sure, he learned, you know, a good amount in that in between year and a half, surrounded by good people, constantly kind of checking himself.
Mm-hmm.
But sophomore year, everyone saw a little bit of this. The first five words someone would say to describe him.
I think I know where you might be going.
You know, cocky or arrogant would be fourth or fifth. Senior year, he was the same person, if not more confident in himself. Cocky or arrogant would be one of the last things. But
it
was all about
the way he framed it.
That in personal perception of everyone. I mean, when you believe that somebody is in this position and not going to lead you wrong, you're not going to think negative things about him.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way in relationships. People aren't going to think anything negative until they lose that ideal painting, and then that's why you realize towards the end of things, like, wow, I hated everything. How did I not notice? I mean, it's how people will defend their friends when everyone's in a fight. You know, you block out.
It's all about perception.
Yeah, it's all about perception. So audience matters way more than speaking. That's a very long way of saying that.
So interesting to me. I was just listening to a podcast with Pete Holmes, who I was just talking about, and who was it? I think it was Bo Burnham, and they were talking about how.
Listened to some Bo Burnham the other day, actually.
Were you?
The What CD, yeah.
That's great. That's the best. It's his most recent. So good, dude. It's phenomenal. Yeah, it was good, Mo. He's close to our age. I'd be sick to have him on.
Yeah.
But that's never going to happen. But what I was saying is, they were all talking about, how when you know someone, when there's someone who has done bad things, and people only see that and judge him for that. And then there's people who are close to him who's like, oh no, but you don't know the real him.
Right. Exactly.
It's all about the way that person, how the audience perceives him.
Yeah.
That's what you said.
Yeah. It's why having court cases and criminal trials go to the media, it's decided beforehand. If you're guilty in public opinion, you've already lost. Even if you don't get charged, you've lost. It's why people who are accused of domestic violence or sex crimes, no one looks into any sort of lead up. Not saying that either of those things are ever good. Those things are terrible and happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're accused of a domestic violence and you're a male, even if it's shown that there was a lead up or maybe there was something that happened, you see it a lot with athletes in college programs. You know, they're saying like, oh, they were at a bar and he hit someone. No one's going to look into what's happening behind, for better or for worse, isn't up to me, but you're looking at how much public opinion matters. That person will always be tied to that issue regardless. Whereas if it's shoplifting and they're innocent, then it doesn't matter as much. Yeah. Public perception is probably the most important facet of any person in any position ever.
Yeah.
It's how people are going to get promotions. It's how you get further in anything, is how people see you is a lot more important than what you do.
Well, if you're saying that what you did and who you are was all a facade.
No, it wasn't a facade. It started as someone applying a level of confidence and status, and then you become that status. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
If you're put into a position to succeed and everyone wants you to, you probably will. Yeah, it makes it that much easier.
Well,
you're put on a yellow brick road to 2.5 years, maybe max, of people knowing who you are. That's about it. But you had that. People knew who you were.
Yeah, until I started just living in my house, staying in my home.
True, but your name was recognized for for things. Like, that's, it's the same way. I mean,
people
who didn't know you would say that they knew you.
Yes.
And that's a weird concept.
So
to have.
Weird. It
right.
Weird.
But it comes from perception, is people who didn't know
not
who
always
you were.
Maybe for the best reasons.
No, but people, if people know who you were, they're going to take every interaction with you is going to be different.
It's going to be based on what their
right, exactly.
preconceived notion.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, so I don't even know where to go from there.
Well, I have that. I'm going to go. I'm going to break the.
Yeah, break the
fourth wall. I don't think that's the right term. I didn't do
break
the theater.
Awkward silence.
No, I'm not going to break the awkward silence.
The fourth wall is when you acknowledge
interview.
The audience.
Okay, audience. Fourth wall is broken. I'm the Kool-Aid man of podcasts. Of the interviewee.
No, yeah, do it,
setup.
Dude. Do
yeah,
it.
No, I've decided that.
Okay.
Is so why this? Why create this? Why not even why me, but why decide like, oh, I'm Joe, and now I'm going to share unscripted ideas of people I know with people I don't know.
Why did I decide to want to do this?
Right, yeah.
Well, a lot of reasons. And a lot of them are kind of what we had already just talked about a little bit. In that, after graduating college, it was the first time where I didn't feel like I was a part of anything. And I felt like there wasn't any communal shared experience. And I felt like a lot of people our age maybe were feeling the same thing I was feeling, in that they were lost and didn't know where to turn and didn't know if it was okay to feel that way. And that maybe there would be some benefit to hearing stories of other people who are our age as well, and hearing commonalities between them and being like, okay, this kid is still figuring it out too. Everything is going to be okay with me, hopefully.
Nice.
And also that there's a perception, we were just talking about perception, there's a perception that from other generations, I mean, other generations don't know what's going to happen with our generation, and that's what happens with every generation.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Except...
You're in uncharted territory.
Yeah, except other generations didn't have the ability to do what we're doing right now, which is get their voices out there in a way that can maybe show... where we're going towards.
Okay.
And what we're moving toward.
Cool.
And maybe to show, like I said in some of my previous episodes, is that we're not all useless and that we might be able to keep this world going in a positive direction. But okay. It was more the first thing.
Yeah, more finding that common string.
Yeah, why did you want to know? Why are you here?
Well, you know, when you... It's cool to be on these. It's cool that people hear me. It's cool. I get to share this later.
Yeah.
Totally going to throw it on my resume.
Yeah.
Throw that on Indeed. Like, yeah, podcast. Like, that's a cool thing.
Right.
I don't listen to podcasts.
Oh, wow. I do. Oh, I just got into them crazy this time.
Yeah. So it's cool. But I mean, you know me. I'm someone who likes to write. I'm somebody who likes
to... You should be doing something like this, dude.
Well, sure. But that's not my end goal.
Okay.
We'll take that avenue
when
later.
We get to it.
Is the first thing you think about, and the first thing a lot of famous authors have said is, when you write your first book,
right.
Write everything that you thought was a good idea. Write your feelings down. Write your, you know, whatever you're, if you're going to be a fiction writer, write. Because all fiction is inevitably tied to the author.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if I'm
going to
write...
That's the same thing with screenplays.
Yeah, if I'm going to write a drama, no matter what, part of me is in there. Part of it's going to
yes,
be about me no matter
of course.
How much I try. And then burn that, because now you got it out. So now all the stuff that you thought was important, you can set on fire, and then you can start what
so
other people are going to
care about.
So you think
this is useless?
No, I don't think this is useless. I think this is totally, totally useful. But my thought is, in asking you why you would do it...
Right.
Is for everyone listening. It's the same reason of why did you want to do this, of why do they want to listen to this, or why do they want to do something on their own? Because when I think of, you know, you as my friend, if I'm going to say, hey, Joe, here's how I would think that this is going to be super popular, is reminding people sort of why we do what we do. I think that's almost like the hidden theme of what you're doing. And correct
right.
me if I'm wrong, but
right.
I feel like that's what you're doing is, yes, you wanted to do it to kind of connect with everyone and to feel that community and be the catalyst of like, oh, I'm not lost. I'm just looking.
Yeah.
Not all those who wander lost.
So you're saying to remind people that there's a point to all this? Because almost, I don't know if there is.
No, there. But there is. That is the point. Look beyond what you seek. Is like the idea that it's not necessarily, you didn't just create this on a whim to go be heard.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think it's a little bit
hard for me to create this. Right.
It's a little bit in there for you. It's like, oh, you know, why did I create this? Oh, just to kind of like string that common chord among people. But I think that that's a larger question for everyone is, well, yes, maybe only 10 people hear you right now.
Right.
But what makes them listen? And then you circle in on that, and that brings your audience and you as the creator closer. Is
right.
Okay. So why is an audience listening? Is because there are ideas worth sharing in our generation that maybe an older generation doesn't understand yet, or
can learn to understand,
or we have questions and we don't know what they are yet. And by talking it out between me and between other people, you know, and between controversial people, all our age, mm-hmm. everyone kind of figures out like, oh, that's what we do. That's what we're doing. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I think that that's what a lot of people will realize slowly is that like, well, what's the point of listening to two college friends talk back and forth? Like very clearly we know each other. Like
yeah.
you're not getting anything new out of this interview. It's
well,
not
like, I am. Everything, it's not every like, conversation with not just you, well, especially every conversation with you is a new one. But every conversation with anyone I know is a new one.
But I mean, I know you and I have a shared like immense respect for like late night talk show hosts and people who right. will take strangers and make them feel like family. Like I think like Jon Stewart's this unreal interviewer mm-hmm. because you think that he's hung out with them forever and realistically, for the most part, he hasn't. Mm-hmm. And it's because they have that ability to say, we have whatever we have in common is irrelevant. It's that shared thing that everyone has in common. So I think right. that's, you know, that's what you're getting out of this. So when you make that almost like known, I think that it's going to make the whole experience like much, much more beneficial. So,
well, you just did.
Well, I thought of that earlier as I thought like, oh, it's Friday. I don't want to talk to Joe right now. If I'm going to talk to Joe, I'm going to get a beer with Joe and hang out. Like no one cares what me and Joe talk about. And so then my ride home, I started thinking, well, why would anyone care what Joe and I talk about? You know, should we talk about controversial issues? What do two 22-year-olds think about gun control or international terrorism or whatever? But it's like, no, because then that's forced. The natural flow of you didn't come in here with anything and I'm sitting on my bed is important because it's going to make, it's going to just make that something almost universal. Like that's what I think is important is that it's not two people talking. I could be replaced by anybody. It's the sort of shared experience of just being us now.
I agree with that, and I understand the importance of universality, or mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying,
cosmopolitanism yeah. per se. That's my thesis.
Really?
I wrote about internationalism, transnationalism, and cosmopolitanism as shown by the characters of the Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
I didn't really know what I wrote about, but I did do well.
What was that for?
That was for English.
Yeah.
English degree.
You were an English major.
I was.
But I, what I was saying is, I understand what you're saying, but you can't make interviews with an individual person too ambiguous.
Oh, no, no, no.
Because I still want to get to what the person's story is and
yeah,
what
definitely.
They're dealing with. Because even right. though someone might not be able to relate with it, like this is just an example. I want to interview this kid who's around our age who's a comedian. And I want to...
Is he funnier than you?
Oh, he's so much funnier. I'm not funny at all.
Yeah.
No, he's so much funnier than me. He's like doing well in the New York scene.
That's good.
And he was my neighbor growing up, so that's how I know him.
Nice.
But, like, kids, not everyone listening our age is a comedian.
No, true,
but
true.
I'm interested in that and yeah. want to know about his process and, like,
definitely.
People are... But, like,
yeah, no, we agree in that sense. I'm not saying the individual is irrelevant. The individual is totally relevant. If not, this is just a verbal diary for you, and God knows no one needs that.
Yeah.
But I think, it was a reminder for me of... And I think if nothing else, I mean, what I kind of thought about doing this before we started talking mm-hmm. is what a lot of people who might listen, and I guess maybe this is just the way I am, is when I'm doing something, when I'm in class or when I'm doing anything, and I think this is shared among a lot of people our age, is, well, what's in it for me? Where the why mm-hmm. do I need this sort of demographic is exactly, you know, what you're saying is, why would I listen to two guys that I don't know talk?
Right.
And it's exactly what you're looking for is it's more than just, you know, a whim. It's more than a goal. It's more than to sort of be heard. It's to understand that every individual person on their individual little journey towards success is on that same,
or towards whatever.
Yeah, is on. We're all on, you know, the same highway, taking different exits to where we want to go. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is really kind of like a theme that I didn't understand before I had kind of sat down with you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, I listened to your other episodes, and it's not until you think about them afterwards that you understand, like, oh, this makes sense. Yeah. This is why anyone cares about what I have to say, well, despite being a
hopefully
random guy. Yeah. No, I think you got that. I think that that's what you get out of these experiences, is maybe it's not necessarily like right out there at first, but you get it after. So I wouldn't say hopefully that's what people get. Yeah. I would say they get it.
Well, yeah. Thank you for saying that. And thanks yeah. for reaffirming and putting it in a different way that is going to help me move
right, moving yeah. forward. It's not your verbal diary. It's cool.
No, definitely not. You know, the thing for your Wi-Fi in your house keeps popping up for me to join it.
And yeah, it's not good Wi-Fi. Comcast.
Unless
they're a sponsor, I will say mean things about them.
Get me started on Comcast.
They're not a sponsor?
One of the most traumatic experiences I've ever had in my life, and I'm not even joking, this summer had to do with Comcast. And it was about
the new episode of Louie got canceled or something stupid.
Well, that would be terrible. No, it was just trying to cancel my service.
Yep, they'll get you.
And it was just like, my God. Well, I was trying to move the service onto the new guys who take over the head.
They're a clingy girlfriend of... Yeah.
But anyway, no one wants to hear about my Comcast issues.
Nope.
And I could get that from your body language that you're like, let's move on to the next thing. Let's not talk about Comcast. Something this stupid. Right. But anyway, I guess what I want to talk about next is how you decided... Or what your thoughts were going into college, what it would be, and then how they changed, and why you decided to go to Quinnipiac, and if you got out of it what you initially thought you wanted to get out of it, or if you got something out of it that was different that you never would expect, but you still do appreciate.
Surely, I ended up at Quinnipiac
And should you have gone to a better school?
Well, Quinnipiac is a good school.
It is a good school, but there's better schools.
More prestigious schools, but it was a good school.
Of course.
I went to Quinnipiac kind of by I don't want to say by force, but not by necessarily choice. That's terrible to say because it's a really expensive school that my parents like helped me with a ton.
Yeah.
And I'm very thankful now, but I wanted to go to the University of Virginia and go into their teaching program, which I was not accepted to. So forget that. Cause I was going to be a teacher, which as you can tell worked out well.
Now you're not.
So I went to Quinnipiac because I had a friend who went here. I mean, I was going to go to UMaine with all my friends, from high school, but my parents told me, you know, why don't you grow up a little bit? Cause everyone from our high school goes to UMaine for the most part. So I was like, okay, so I'll go down here. I had a friend who went here. But I was basically going to give it like a trial year. And if I hated it, I was going to leave. And then I just happened to meet really great friends. I mean, all I really wanted out of college was just good people, like good friends. Like I would have been happy anywhere if I was around good people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate, like my roommate freshman year became my roommate, like a very good friend of 4 years.
You met me.
I met you. And then 3 years later that became valuable to have. But being around good people
finally paid off.
Makes everything easier.
Yeah.
So all I really wanted was friends like I had back home and like a place I enjoyed being. And Quinnipiac very, very quickly became that, and it kept changing. You know, I had my freshman roommate friends, and I started joining different clubs and organizations, and I found just different niches where I could get all the things I needed to be satisfied. I mean, mm-hmm. I had the guys I could hang around with. I had the people that I could influence. Like that was always important, was being able to have like a positive role model for people.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to do that in a lot of different ways. And I definitely took way more out of extracurriculars and involvement than I did from classes. I mean, that's kind of granted because there's only so much you can take out of reading poets who have been long dead for many years. But you know, you take a lot of a social intelligence away, and that's really what I got. I think I got the tools to be able to succeed, and I'm super happy with like who I was and what I accomplished. And it was nice that not everyone knew you, but it was cool that you could walk into a place and usually not see a stranger. So it ended up being an ideal environment for me to succeed. And that was something that I wouldn't have expected.
And that's really all you can ask
and that's,
for.
Yeah, if I had to do it again, I would totally do it again. I have lifetime friends. I have great experience, like great memories. And I think I have all of the ability to succeed in the future. As far as what I thought I would take out of it, I mean, I thought I was going to be like an advanced student who got a master's in 4 years and like went to go teach. But I think what I took out of it was the knowledge that that's not what I wanted to do. And maybe I don't have the direct knowledge of what I want to do, but I know that I could do what I want to do once what I want to do becomes
apparent.
Becomes a tangible
thing.
But yeah, I wouldn't change anything. It was exactly what I wanted. I got better friends out of it than I would have anticipated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no regrets about going. And when you feel like, and when you graduate and you feel like it was time to leave, you know, you accomplished what you needed to.
Yes.
As much fun as it would be to not be up at, 7:30 every day going to work, I couldn't have done another year in school. You know, I kind of left it all in the field, coach, for once, now that I was put in.
Yeah, you left it there. You're ready for the next phase.
Yeah, exactly. Ready for the next phase, which is good.
Which is crazy. I was kind of ready for the next phase.
Everyone was. Some of our friends are still there, but everyone else was.
That's hard though, getting to that place.
Yeah. Yeah. But when you're in a good environment, you get there.
What happened to you senior year where you were like, I think I need to, this needs to be over.
Well, it's not, this needs to be over. I mean, if anyone came up to you and said, hey, I'll pay you. And all you have to do is hang out, show up to a couple meetings a week. And the rest of the time you can eat and play video games and not wear pants and go out and be around cool people all the time.
You take that.
But I think, I mean, once you kind of see yourself phased out, once you're not as vital as a person, you know, you've done your job. So when you see, you know, kids that you always had to, you know, pick up and drive to the train station, or when you see people who always turned left to you for advice are now turning forwards and spreading their own thoughts, you've had your impact. You've done what you needed to do. You're 4 years is enough time to get into something, grow up, learn the ropes, change them, pass on what you changed, and then have somebody else do the exact same thing. It's just a good cycle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I don't think there was a specific moment that I said, like, oh, I should go now. I think there was a lot of gradual moments where I said, I'm getting a little older, you know? Like, yeah, going to the bar will always be sweet, but you also want a new type of success. You know, after a while, getting an A on a paper isn't an accomplishment anymore. It's an expectation. Yeah. So you want a challenge, and that's why you pay your own bills. And then you're saying, well, why would I do this? This is silly.
Yeah.
That's why you go work for someone who yells at you a lot. And you're like, well, why would I take all this? And it's because eventually you want to change that. You know what I mean? You're always trying to push forward. I think it's just kind of natural to push forward. There's not many complacent people.
Yeah. It was definitely apparent, the whole passing on the torch thing.
Yeah.
Where I've seen people who once relied on you for information starting to be able to do it themselves.
Which is really all you want. I mean, that's a great end credits.
Yeah.
That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's a great falling action. Yeah. Or whatever.
Right off in the sunset, yeah.
Well, you know, something else that's interesting to me is like I said before, I think you're a smart person.
Thanks.
Growing up, you seem to be someone who has it together, but that is just all the perception.
Sure.
Right. And I'm sure there's things that you struggle with all the time.
Yeah.
But as you grew up and as you started gaining more, getting a bigger tool belt, as you started to broaden your mind and broaden your intelligence, what do you think the difference between the things you struggled with and struggle with now are with the things that you struggled with when you were a kid? Do you think, how have your struggles evolved? And is there anything that, like, I talked about this with Zach a little bit. Like, is there anything that became demystified as you got older and your perspective got changed?
I
don't want to take this to a place that's so, but like, I know that you're a religious person.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to come right out there and say it, but do you have any struggles with you as a logical person with keeping your faith?
Oh, cool. That's a cool question.
Because I do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in a similar way to how I do a lot of things is I will kind of take a system and kind of make it like a guidebook and make a little bit of like my own.
Right.
So I grew up in a family that had a lot of like faith and beliefs, but my parents are different religions. So it sort of just became like, it's a comfort zone of, believe what you believe if you need to believe something almost. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't, you know, I'm not religious in the sense that like went to church every Sunday, you know, could recite passages that are meaningful to me, things like that. I like wear a cross and I have one like as a tattoo, but that's more of like a memoriam sort of thing.
The cross?
That one here?
No, the tattoo.
Oh, yeah, a tattoo on the back.
Yeah.
But it's more of like, you know, it's a, I kind of just sort of follow the rules how they fit me. So like I'm a very socially liberal person, if we're going to go a little politicky for a little bit, politicky. is that socially liberal person? Like I think that everyone, is, you know, everyone should kind of live how they would feel freely, because it doesn't really affect me. So I'm kind of like a, you know, free, do what you want sort of person,
right.
But also faithful in the fact that like, I think that having a belief in something is super important to people getting through struggles. And like, I know that I have that, like, I know that like in various times of need, I 100% without a doubt felt that some sort of divine intervention was occurring. In terms of like how I think like the world started, I've never even bothered to really look into it. I'm just sort of here.
Yeah.
And I think that like hearing different views is really cool. Like I think like the basics of like Buddhism are really cool.
Oh yeah, I've been learning about that element.
Yeah, and I think a lot of like Catholicism, Christianity is really cool, and the different sects are really cool. But I guess my personal kind of lens and window of like faith has never been mutually exclusive. Like I am. My dad's side's Irish, like obviously Irish Catholic, but like very open and accepting socially and liberally.
Is it a belief of not wanting this to all be for nothing?
Really thought about that. Just kind of like having
something to turn
someone,
to.
Not even something to turn to, just like having a belief that someone's looking out for you or something is looking out for right. you. Not necessarily like, you know, predestination, like there's a definitive plan. Mm-hmm. There are certainly times you feel that way. Like there are times where you're like, wow, that wouldn't happen by chance.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that just helps people feel better too. I mean, when the biggest question, I mean, the thing people fear most is dying, because it's the big question that no one knows what happens. So if faith helps you kind of deal with what happens when you hit that big question, certainly. I mean, that's where I would imagine I'd go.
Yeah.
It's a comforting thing, and it's an answer no one knows. So why not have something that you think would happen, you know?
Dude, the concept of heaven and hell to me is just so ridiculous.
Maybe, yeah.
Because, I mean, think about it. Your life is such a finite thing.
Maybe.
Well,
I mean, because...
Just the whole concept of you're going to spend the rest of your existence for eternity right. in this terrible place
inconceivable concept.
Yeah, because of the mistakes you made in an 80-year time frame. True. Like,
yeah, I mean, you watched Last Stand Up. Have you ever seen Bill Burr?
Yeah.
He does that set where he says that there's like religion in like Sweden.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, they believe that just when you're dead, that's it.
Yeah.
And you know, you ask like, oh, what does that mean? He's like, well, you remember like when you were like right when you're born? They're like, no. They're like, yeah, it's like that. but just as inconceivable as it is things to go on forever, it's the only way, you know, if you don't have like a belief in some sort of afterlife, the only way you can kind of conceive death, I mean, I guess the way that I've always thought of it is like, oh, it's like my eyes are closed and I'm just staring at black, but that's still life. You're still there.
You're still feeling.
I don't think it's a human capacity to imagine not yourself, because you don't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, I mean, you fill in those blanks however you fill them in. You know, there's nothing. I mean, the reason that there's been millions of holy wars is that no one has a right answer.
So
you hit each other with sticks. Like It's something that no one.
And it's ridiculous. If
there's a million, inexplicable things.
Yes.
That being one of them, I think.
It's so ridiculous. And that's all about, going back to the whole perception thing, is the holy wars. If, given the circumstance, if someone from, say, Israel was born where someone from Palestine was born, they would be who they are.
Yep.
It's just all about the environment in which they were raised.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But anyway, I just wanted to get that because I wanted you to help me.
Yeah, I definitely don't have any answers, but I think I'm just kind of complacent that I don't.
Should we talk about late night? Should we?
Put it to bed.
Yeah, right?
It had potential.
I think it's important just from the standpoint of the adjustment of expectation.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it. And learning how to adapt to a situation.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, should we get into it?
I mean, it's a long story, but I think what you just said is two of the best ways to put it. I mean, we
went into it
thinking that we were, well, I think
we thought
we
there was
a lot.
An echelon. We thought there was a tier, and then we found out that it was more.
Yeah, I mean, we learned a lot from that. We learned it's not super easy to make a lot of people laugh. It takes a lot of effort.
Yes.
We are funny, generally funny people in everyday life. And
so for people,
becoming funny became a chore.
Yeah. So
that we were bad at, that we didn't do.
So for people, we're going to try to move past this because, I mean, it's not super relatable, but for people listening, Charlie and I, and we'll just call you Stop. I hosted a late night talk show, for our school's television station. And we wrote all some of the things together.
Most
of it together. Yeah. And we went into it. I mean, I'm going to just speak for me personally. I went into it thinking this could be such a cool thing. Like, we can make something great. We can show how creative college students are. We can be a voice for the Quinnipiac students and showing and making fun of some of the ridiculous things that happened. But then when we went into it, we quickly realized that it wasn't about that.
Right.
It was about...
It was like filling an agenda.
And an educational experience.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, we took a lot of good.
Making sure that everyone's opinions were validated, regardless of if their opinion would compromise the goodness of the show, the product.
Well, I think we had a couple clashes. I mean, you and I, the organizations that you and I were in were very internally run. It was...
Right.
It was a hierarchy, and it was, if something wasn't working, you immediately changed it, and it wasn't really about the people. If you weren't qualified, we were always in organizations where you were elected into leadership positions. So we were very used to...
Well, we kind of were. We auditioned and...
Sort of, yes. But I think that comes down to what you thought. We thought there was a tier. We thought that we were creatively directing. And we joined a volunteering, everyone sort of being involved... sort of thing. And we didn't really mesh with that. We're very used to creating a good product regardless of who creates it. And we were in an organization where the product was secondary to the experience.
Yes.
And I think that both sides were off on that. But I do think we learned a lot. I mean, I definitely learned that making people laugh is a business and you got to really work on it.
I learned that because there was all that, the executive producers wanting me and you to be amongst the people and amongst the crew and getting to know everybody.
Right.
And them seeing us as intimidating.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was hard for us because we're not intimidating people, but we're intimidating presences in those scenarios.
I'm intimidated by just hearing that. Like, anyone who knows me knows that I can be an introverted person and that it was just as hard for me to get...
Totally.
Like, think about it this way. It was me as an individual... My responsibility to get to know a whole group of people and not that whole group of people's responsibility to get to know me.
And since middle school, you had to meet and get along with a class of people. I mean, it's not really natural at this point.
Yeah.
But I think we learned that, and we also learned, to a point we kind of learned when something's not working, what you do. I mean, we tried a lot of stuff out. We tried to be very sociable people, but we're slowly getting kind of phased in different directions.
Right.
And I think we learned a lot of you can't really, especially with humor, it has to be yours. Like, it's difficult to deliver other ideas
because
if you don't think they're funny, it can't be natural. I mean, it's the same as if someone else was, telling you to do this idea. If you don't have a passion for it, you can't do it.
Right.
I mean, our first couple episodes where we kind of didn't have leashes and we were just going, even if they weren't that funny, we were having a lot of fun with them.
And there were still things that we took from,
you know, became work, but
there was things we took from other people.
Yeah.
And the ideas that we thought people had that were good that we used. Yeah.
Maybe at the end of the day, we're just miserable people to work with.
But yeah, maybe that's what it is.
I don't know. I think it was good for us to kind of have that check of something that doesn't work. I think that was a good experience for us. Right. If for nothing else than something we both really cared about. I mean, we have shirts with our name on them.
Yeah.
Those are vintage. Those are collectors.
Those were sick shirts.
Those are going to be on...
Thanks to my daddy.
Yeah, those are going to be on...
Dad.
American Pickers one day.
Yeah, hopefully.
But it was important to have something to us that we really cared about kind of be a failure, I think, because that launches you into being more successful later, I think is important.
Well, yeah, man.
Especially you and I getting our privilege checked, you could say.
Yeah, that was good. It was good for us.
I mean, sucked, but we could have gotten our privilege checked many other times than that one.
For sure. All right. Well, I kind of want to wrap this up soon because we've been talking for a while. But what is the job that you're doing now?
I write various content at a digital marketing company.
Do you like it?
Websites, emails, blogs. Yeah, it's chill to get paid to write. When you're someone who writes, because writing is a recreational hobby that I could turn into a job. And it's fun and challenging, and I get to use different voices and do other things like plays on words that people like.
Right.
But really, it's much more fun to just have a job. It's cool to be in an area where you're looking up at where you're going next instead of looking down at what you're pulling up. It's a very new experience. It's cool. It's cool.
So, but do you have a plan? Are you just going with the flow?
It's tough to plan. Going with the flow for now. I mean, hopes for the future. Yeah, there's a ton of big ones. I'd love to own my own restaurant. I'd love to be a professor. But it's tough to know.
Something that's more creative?
Why am I doing something that's more creative?
No, why aren't you?
Because you got to get in, man. I never had an internship before. I every job I've ever had has been in a school. I've never had to wear khakis. That's a big deal. I've never had to interact with a boss. I've never been in a position where I could be fired. Every person I've ever worked for is like a friend, or even at the school, you know, when we worked in jobs, very quickly became friendly.
Right.
So it's vital to have that experience where you're expendable and where you're new and where you're not valuable and you have to prove value. That's super cool. So yeah, it'd be dope to be, you know, writing a book or working on, I don't know what else I would really be doing, you know, working on scripts or something and being part of that team. But I've done that. And I know that later I can go back to that. But when I'm just coming out, kind of my plan was like establish that you could always be able to get bills paid. And especially someone in a, you know, with a humanities major that doesn't lead to any one path, it's super important to show anyone like, look, no, seriously, someone paid me for a year to write. You should do that too for more. Like, it's important to kind of show that stability, because when you have that very vague, and you to a point kind of know this with that creative background you have, is like when you have a vague title, you have to prove that they should even consider you. Like if you're a business major, even if you weren't good at business, you can say, I know the business things. I can go to a business and business with them.
When you're a film major, it's like, okay, what films have you made?
Right.
I can't just say I'm a film major.
Right. When you studied essay structure forever, there's no job that's writing essays. There's a lot of jobs that are writing. So it's good to have that stable place, especially in a business world like I'm in now, where I'm in marketing and I'm in advertising and I'm in sales and I'm in event planning, that I can pick up all of those really important facets, along with like, how do you talk to somebody that pays you to do something? How do you do that? So that experience is really cool too.
Well, I don't think you're going to be expendable for long.
Well, we hope
I think
so.
You're
going to
be
you.
Self-productive.
Well, we hope so.
And I think you're, I think anyone listening could tell that you are going to be fine.
Thanks. Thanks, audience. Fourth wall down again.
But thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Thank you for doing this for everyone. This is cool. It is cool to see you doing things you enjoy doing.
Oh yeah.
It's cool to see you interested in stuff. So I hope that it keeps going. And you keep workshopping it and you keep doing these cool things, because there's a lot there. You gotta put it out there. So it's cool that you're putting it out there.
Thanks,
cool it. We're on iTunes.
Yeah.
The mixtape is dropping soon. We got a lot coming up in Joke Whole Life.
I do not have a mixtape. That was a joke. goes back to the whole sense of humor thing.
But really, it is cool that you're kind of going for it, because I think we both know
I'm not going for anything.
Well, you are, it's cool that you're doing your own projects, because that's what your type is. You do your own projects. You know, you're not doing other people's projects, because that's not what you want to do.
Maybe I should be expendable, though.
No. I think you got that. You got that. You know, fire. You got to kind of go for it. You don't want to let that die, because then you're just a film major. You got to keep that passion up. So it's cool. But thank you. It was cool talking.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening, everyone. All right,
let's end this.
All right.
Love you.
Love you too.
Okay. Bye. All right. That's all we got. Thank you to Charlie Doe for being on the podcast and for offering your voice and for helping me in the interview in the way that you did, and for helping others who listened and providing your insight. I really appreciate it. And that's all we got for this one. Thank you to everyone who's been listening and been staying along with this. I'll see you next week. We'll have another one for you. So long.